Well, what is it? Snake venom? Toxic ocean snail poisons developed by your Department of Defense? And what's in those white fibrous clots is finally known. Combustible, toxic, radioactive metals. And I've got the two best experts with me tonight to answer all of your questions. This is the Dr. Jane Ruby Show, and you're about to enter Truth in Medicine. Welcome to the Dr. Jane Ruby Show on this Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. I'm Dr. Jane Ruby. Last week, I brought you a blockbuster interview with Dr. Brian Artis that is now over 500,000 views worldwide. Dr. Artis said he was wrong about the original snake venom that he discussed when he and Stu Peters launched Watch the Water. He has since discovered hundreds of animal venom developed by cloning animal glands to then create billions of synthetic venom materials that now saturate our environment from many different angles. And Mike Adams is the hero in the house for the only frontline expert who would step forward and examine in his ISO-certified national lab the white clots pulled from jabbed cadavers by the first embalmer to step forward. Mike has found frightening levels of very dangerous metals not normally found in the human body, combustible when exposed to lactic acid, and so much more that he is going to break today. But the really exciting part is to this whole story, to these incredible scientists that have worked together many times and are now connecting the dots that with each other, but many other experts as well, like counter-bioterrorism, Dr. Tao Braun, Sasha Latipova from Team Enigma, and so many more. And after I've interviewed both of these incredible experts, you had so many questions, so many excellent questions that came out of those discussions. And I'm bringing them back tonight so that we could get to those questions and get further updates. Well, last week I conducted an interview with Dr. Brian Artis because he said he was actually wrong in the beginning when he reported snake venom. It's not just the king cobra, it turns out, and the crate snake that's poisoning the world in the COVID-19 scam. It's so many more animal venoms that have been converted to synthetic poisons that he's discovered. And Mike Adams, the health ranger and the founder of Brighteon TV, an expert in microscopy, was the first person to bravely step forward and actually begin the analysis of the chemical composition of embalmer Richard Hirschman's findings, who was the first embalmer to step forward with these white clots pulled from jabbed cadavers. And Mike's findings stunned the world as he and I walked through his demonstration live on the Alex Jones Show some months ago. What he found were metals that are almost never found in the human body, and so much more information that he has since done on these vials and more. And I couldn't think of anything more powerful than to bring these two scientists together for a joint discussion to help answer all of the questions that you've had since I brought these findings forward. And I'm really excited to welcome both Dr. Brian Artis and Health Ranger Mike Adams to the Dr. Jane Ruby Show. Gentlemen, this is an unprecedented honor of mine. Thank you so much for being with me.
It's great to be here, Jane.
And our honor. Yes.
Yeah, I have so much admiration awesome. For both of you. I can't even begin to tell you. Anyway, I want to start in give the audience a little bit of a refresher and a background from each of you of what you've laid out so far. And then we're going to get into more of a discussion together. And then in a little while, Mike, you're going to share some findings that is kind of an exclusive first time out of the box. So I'm excited about that, too. So, Mike, why don't you start with your initial findings in that famous clot that you got samples of from Richard Hirschman?
Okay, I will. And by the way, thank you for connecting me to Richard Hirschman so we could get those samples. And I just want to say also, I know that Brian's going to present his research, but when he first talked about venom peptides, you know, we were the only ones, I think, in the industry that published detailed research articles about VenomTech and other companies that have a database of peptides from venom that are used throughout the medical industry and are referenced probably hundreds of thousands of times in research papers. So I just want to say for the record that anybody out there who is claiming that there's no such thing as venom or venom peptides in medicine, you don't know what you're talking about. It's all throughout the literature. I can give you two companies that actually license these. They license them to all big pharma and so on. So let's just get past that ridiculousness of claiming there's no such thing as venom peptides in medicine. And no, nobody's talking about running around milking millions of snakes for venom. It's all right. Synthetically created, folks. I still hear people who don't get this, people who should know better. Mm-hmm. They still don't get it. It's created synthetically. The same way, you know, in a lab, they create vitamin C or they create different nutritional supplements from yeast and E. coli. So anyway, I just want to put that out there for the record, okay, before I get started. With that said, what I've covered, you know, my laboratory is ICP-MS, heavy metals and elemental analysis plus microscopy. And we also have triple quad mass spec equipment. So what we've done, we took those the biostructures, we'll call them, the clots from Richard Hirschman. We put them under the microscope. You were with me when we did that on the Alex Jones Show live, and we looked at them. And then we did an analysis with a heavy metals analysis, the ICP-MS, and we found that these structures, whatever they are, they contain higher concentrations of conductive metals compared to normal human tissue or even, you know, meat or dog food or chicken breast or whatever, because we test food all the time in our lab too. So I've been pursuing more of the nanotech side of this, while Dr. Artis is focused on more of the venom tech side or the venom peptides side of this, but they interrelate in ways that I think will become apparent today. And then I'll turn it back to you, but sometime here in this interview, I want to drop the bombshell I have about needles. So just remember the word needles. We're going to get into some of that today. This is the first time I've talked about it publicly. We have new results. So yeah. That's kind of the summary.
Yeah. And thank you for that. And we can do that, you know, after we hear from, you know, get Brian's quick summary. We can get into that at any time you want, because I think it's all going to be part of it and it'll be important for people to know. So Brian, just a quick summary. I mean, our interview from last week was so well received. I mean, it's literally almost a half a million views. And people are clamoring about it. There was so much rich information. And we kind of caught them a little bit with a play on words, which was your idea, where we titled it, Dr. Artis Was Wrong. So give the audience a little bit of a refresh summary on that.
Yeah, that was a little bit fun. You called the day before and you said, what should we title this presentation you're about to give? And I said, why don't you just say Dr. Artis was wrong? And it was really quite funny because people were worried that I would actually even say that, and yep. Maybe that'll throw people off. And the truth was, it's actually more complex and more venomously involved than even I realized. That was the truth. So the truth's coming out of China and France in the first months of the COVID-19 pandemic of 2020. In January of 2020, Chinese researchers said the people who were sick in Wuhan, the antibodies in their body fighting this new novel COVID pneumonia, they actually were attacking and identifying venom peptides from two snakes. And they believe the origin source for COVID was the Chinese crepe and the Chinese king cobra snakes. And then it was published on CNN and all over the place, all over the world, that the origin source for the Wuhan virus was, which they were calling it at the time, were actually snakes. And then the third most likely source was bats.
Yeah.
And then in France, in April of 2020, they found that the spike protein, when they ran the gene sequences of it, they found that it was not just crepe venom peptides, which is a short sequence of protein from the venom of crepe snakes. It also was the Chinese king cobra venom peptide was the spike protein. And then three different snippets of genetic material from the rabies virus. And then so that was one thing. And then what I did with your audience on Friday was take them through the evidence out of a study in Italy 2 months later in 2020 from the French study. They actually published when they ran the blood, urine, and feces of COVID-19 PCR positive patients in multiple cities in Italy. They also took people who PCR tested negative for COVID from multiple cities in Italy, and they took their tissue samples of urine, blood, and feces. And then they ran them through a bunch of lab techniques called liquid chromatography and mass spectrometry. And they wanted to see, is it true, like the Chinese researchers and French researchers, is it true there might be venom peptides causing COVID symptoms? Mm. And when they ran the sequences of venoms found in the COVID-19 patients only, they actually published 36 different venom sources and then the actual component of the venoms from 20 different snakes found in the blood and feces of COVID-19 patients, and then 16 marine shellfish venoms in the blood and feces of the COVID-19 patients. And then they also published, they actually found zero animal venoms inside of the negative PCR patients who did not test positive for COVID. And then we laid out for the world my concerns about these 15 different marine snail venoms in COVID patients called conotoxins. And then we took you through and showed the world, like Mike just mentioned, I gave just one example on your show of a company you could order online synthetic crate venom, the exact component of crate venom found in COVID-19 patients. You can order it online. And then it designates on the website, you at home get to choose what do you want your synthetic snake venom from the crate snake to be made in? Do you want it made in yeast or E. coli or mammal cells? And it was just an eye-opening experience to witness that the body can synthetically make this in mammal cells, make it in the lab in bacteria, E. coli, and yeast.
Yeah, and thank you for that. That is a great summary. I want both of you to know that, because you've both been on the show before, the pictures, the slides, everything, Brian, that you brought on Friday, Mike, in our previous interviews, we have if you can recall, because you've actually conducted these analyses, I have those available. So if you want to refer to them, we will, you know, our producers will definitely bring them up on the screen so that people can see what you're talking about. Just reference it with a title or a description, and they're pretty sharp. So anyway, with that said, thank you both for that. Mike, do you want to give us the new discovery that you've not talked about?
Not yet. Okay. I will shortly, but I have something new to add to your interview with Dr. Artis from a couple of days ago, something that I think you're both going to find really exciting. So what the method that they use that Brian just referred to, liquid chromatography plus mass spectrometry, this is a method that I use every day in our laboratory. So we're very familiar with what those look like. And the reason I mention this is because if anybody is out there saying that, oh, this lab didn't know what they were looking at, or it must have been some other molecule that just happened to look the same as these venom peptides. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something, bombshell. I read the study, I looked at the data, they confirmed the molecules in three different ways. Those three ways are, number one, the chromatography elution time, which is where the chemical comes out of the chromatography column at a certain minute, like, you know, minute 2.5 or minute 3 or whatever. You can see the peaks in the charts. That's proof number one. Now, that alone is not absolute proof, but they did two other things. They got the mass of the molecule, which in the charts is expressed as M divided by Z, which is mass over charge ratio, which usually just you simplify that to mass. So they have the mass of the molecule, and you can calculate the mass of every peptide molecule. Every venom molecule has a determined mass based on, you know, the sum of the elements that make it up, right? But then they did a third way, a third confirmation, and that's called ion fragmentation. So if you take any molecule and you blast it with energy, it breaks apart in certain specific identifiable and predictable patterns. Mm. And in mass spectrometry, what you do is you use your instrument to scan for both the original mass, which is M over Z, but also you scan for the ion fragments. And the ion fragments are like a fingerprint at a crime scene. And it tells you that these fragments could only have come from this other molecule, which was also found with the mass over charge ratio. So that's the third confirmation. So in other words, these results are solid. They did all three methods. This wasn't just some guy in his basement with a chromatography machine talking about, oh yeah, we found, you know, cannabinoids or whatever. No, this is mass confirmed and then ion fragmentation confirmed as well. So wow. I wanted to make sure you both know that piece, because it's a big deal.
That's important. Wow, thank you for that, because you really went through that Italian study, which is what you're referring to. And we do have that study. Right. We have the title page so that people can read it for themselves. Maybe they have some ability to, you know, to grasp all of that, but you really did a fine tooth comb through that study, clearly. So Brian, anything to add to that? I mean, that really bolsters, that study really is what just catapulted your findings into this new level.
Yeah, it was one of the final things that made me so confident that it was time to do the interviews with Stu, do the actual interviews with Mike, and then go around the world sharing the confidence that I had that these people did their due diligence.
Yeah.
And they found and confirmed that what the Chinese researchers, French researchers, and now Italy researchers, they all confirmed the same thing. There is this underlying venom peptide, and each of these components from these various venomous creatures absolutely cause every single side effect listed from COVID. In fact, Mike, one of the most impressive, and Dr. Jane, one of the most impressive resulted research studies I found was the University of Arizona study. Mm-hmm. When they took the 300 patients' blood samples in 2021 from two different hospital systems, they wanted to know what kills COVID-19 patients and what's the biomarker we should tell medical doctors to look for. And what they found was very disturbing. They said this enzyme, normally found in rattlesnake venom, is at such levels we've never seen it at this level in the blood of a human. It's 20 times anything we've ever seen in a chronic illness of a human. And the enzyme is called phospholipase A2. Now, this substance, phospholipase A2, was first ever discovered, they disclosed in the research study, it was first ever found in king cobra venom, which just so happened to also be the same snake researchers in China and France said was the originating source for COVID. So it wasn't ironic to me. However, when I showed the Utah State University study on your show, Dr. Jane Ruby, that they were able to use what they call genetic engineering,
yes,
in 2018 to introduce E. coli bacteria to just synthesize synthetic PLA2 from snake venom, mm-hmm, that was the aha moment for me. It was, well, what if there's just microorganisms in that's also complicating certain COVID cases? For example, a diabetic who has uncontrollable ability to manage blood sugar, they very often have co-infections of E. coli, bacterial overgrowth, and yeast or candida, which just happens to be the mediums you can select to manufacture synthetic venom in a lab or in vivo. So I just want people to be aware. I think this is the correlation to the one demographic of people who are dying from COVID and hospitalized the most are diabetics. Once I got to this genetic engineering of synthetic snake venom PLA2 that was confirmed to be the biomarker killing COVID patients by the University of Arizona, this is what made them declare it looks like venom coursing through the body. Mm-hmm. That's what they titled their article. It looks like they've been bitten by snakes because there's so much of this PLA2. I just want people to recognize.
Right.
PLA2 is the massive thing that people were aware of, originally isolated from king cobra venom. They found 20 times the normal level in human beings,
yeah,
with COVID patients.
And what's the other medium that we're loaded with? Mammalian cells, right?
Mammal cells. Yep.
Right.
It's very interesting.
So let me give you the question that came up the most, and it comes up after I've interviewed Mike, and it came up a lot after our interview last week, Brian, and that was, how are we getting it? Thousands of people wrote to me and said, I didn't quite understand how they're saying we get it. Now, Dr. Tao Braun says it's environmental now. It's so ubiquitous. It's gotten out through so many different ways, but do you concur with that? What do you guys think?
Yeah, so I'll tell you my one thought. If you don't know this yet, go look at just type in Google, type in DuckDuckGo, type in United States Department of Justice and the word conotoxin. This article pulls up from 2012. Our United States of America Department of Justice,
yeah,
in 2012 published an article that's still on there live today. It says there's so much conotoxin, this cone snail venom that there was found in COVID-19 patients. They said there's so much of it around the world, we are worried it could be used as a bioterrorist weapon. Mm. And they're going to aerosolize it. And what's going to happen when people breathe it in? It's going to cause respiratory failure. It's in the abstract. Respiratory failure by paralyzing the diaphragm.
Okay. Can either of you bring that down to the average person? They're going to say to you, am I breathing it in? Am I touching it on the counter at the store, the grocery store? Am I getting it?
I have a different theory.
Please, Mike.
On that. Well, I mean, it may be complimentary, but this, you got to understand, Self-replicating vaccines are a technology that's been researched since the 1990s. In fact, the United Nations has acknowledged it. You know, the scientific establishment says that self-replicating vaccines are a key technology that they want to deploy. And I believe they have deployed it. Now, understand, in self-replicating vaccines, and by the way, this brings me to a question I have for Dr. Artis after that interview, but self-replicating vaccines program your body to generate the antigen target, which is the spike protein, in addition to generating another component that is designed to be shed to others around you, and that that shed component, whatever it is, then infects that person's cells, takes over their operating system, and begins to generate both the antigen and other shedding components as well. So that's what a self-replicating vaccine is. And if, and my question to Dr. Artis related to this is, do you believe that there are mRNA instructions in the vaccine that are coded for the body to produce these venom peptides itself?
Mike, that is a great question, and I want to answer it very emphatically and confidently until it's proven otherwise. There isn't a single adverse event being reported by these COVID-19 mRNA shots that does not explicitly in writing, isn't a published side effects of conotoxin envenomation in a human. I believe the mRNA injections are instructions for the human body to engineer these conotoxin venoms and possibly the venoms of these other peptides from snakes.
Exactly.
Yes, I absolutely concur.
Well, what do you think that is coming? What about J&J and AstraZeneca? They don't have a direct mRNA encapsulated, supposedly, if we believe what we're told. They have a different mechanism. Any insight into those two?
I would like to answer that, but I want to hear Mike's thoughts first.
Well, I want to say, if we know that they're finding these toxin peptides in COVID patients, many of whom are no doubt vaccinated as well. So the two vectors of introduction would be to have the toxins in the vaccine, obviously, but the vaccine itself, which is usually half a milliliter of total volume, may not even be large enough to hold the amount of toxins that are being detected in the feces and in the blood plasma. See, so that's why I agree with what Dr. Artis just said, which is that it seems like there is a cocktail of mRNA encoding that is encoding, well, causing the body to synthesize these. And by the way, there are stories out there, mainstream stories, that you can find where people have a yeast in their gut that produces alcohol from carbohydrates. And when they eat too much sugar, they get drunk. They literally get drunk from the alcohol production in their own gut. So this is not a wild theory. This is just basic biochemistry. So you can have yeast and you can have E. coli in your gut. And because that makeup is so different in every individual, it means that some people may have 1,000 times more susceptibility to the vaccines because they're generating potentially 1,000 times more venom in their gut. Wow. Whereas other people, if they have different species of E. coli or they have probiotics that are protecting them, they may have no production of these venom peptides in their body. Does that make sense, Dr. Artis?
Mike, one of the things I actually brought up this weekend to several medical doctors, including Dr. Rashid Buttar, was I want to see the people who have been injured with the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. And I think we should do a stool sample test and see if we can identify an overgrowth of E. coli and yeast in their body. And if all of them come back positive, this could actually be answering the question. And then we need to be actually screening everybody and anybody who ever even thinks they should get these shots. Possibly, you should look to see, do you have a co-infection that could cause increased synthetic development of these peptides?
Yes, exactly.
That's what I'm most concerned about.
You just nailed it. You just nailed it. And what this means is that when those people, if they have the intestinal flora to generate excess peptides, not only is it toxic to them, but the toxins are coming out of their skin. They're shedding peptides. So that, Dr. Ruby, answers your previous question. How can people who maybe who never even took the vaccine or took a different vaccine, how can they end up being affected by this? That's the mechanism. A family member is inadvertently poisoning them.
So unless we're living in a, seriously, I'm not being facetious, a bubble or some kind of isolated way where we're only exposed to other people who have not taken it and don't leave that area, are we all ultimately going to be exposed? I mean, we live in the world of many, many entities and organisms. So
yes, we are. Yes, we are all exposed. And this explains why many people have become sick and had to overcome that sickness through a variety of means. Even though they were not vaccinated, they still got something. This explains exactly how that mechanism could work. And it also explains the symptoms, which Dr. Artis has spoken mm-hmm. about extensively, of the loss of sense of smell, which is a very common nerve damage, either temporary or permanent, caused mm-hmm. by exposure to venom toxins. Right, Dr. Artis?
Exactly right. Not viruses, venoms. This is a published side effect on the NIH's website, is a loss of taste and smell. And various venoms of snakes and conotoxins, or marine snails, have side effects of either lingering months to just over a year loss of taste and smell. And some vipers actually have permanent loss of taste and smell as a published side effect of its bite to a human, or so, introduction of venom into the human body.
That explains the variability. Some people say it comes and goes. It comes and goes for a year or two. I mean, it came, it left. It never came back, all kinds of reports.
And Dr. Ruby, if you don't mind me interjecting, I mean, I apologize if I'm being too forward here, but this also allows the establishment to create a, quote, outbreak in any city at any time by simply using drones to drop into the air aerosolized, lyophilized venom toxins. People will become immediately symptomatic. They'll show up in the hospitals. It'll be diagnosed as COVID or whatever they want mm-hmm. to call it. And then those people will die from the murder in the hospital. And then they'll say, look, people are dying. And then they drive everybody to the next vaccine, which injects people with more instructions to make more venom toxins that spread across the city even more. And they say, look, see, it's out of control. This is how it's being done.
Yeah. And is this something that comes out of chemtrails? I'm not a chemtrail expert. Is that another?
No, low altitude drones just flying around the city. And Homeland Security and New York law enforcement, they were releasing simulated gases in the subways and the parks of New York City a few months ago in a drill that they bragged about. They were studying the airflow patterns of if something were released, where would it flow to? They don't even need airplanes.
Wow.
They can do it with drones. They can do it with little smoke bombs set off in subways, whatever they want. Real easy.
Listen, this is blowing my mind. We're at the end of the first segment. I'm just going to... We're going to take a quick break. I know you're both going to stay. You don't want to miss this. I want to thank our sponsor for this second segment, which is Mike Lindell and MyPillow.com. Please remember to go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code Ruby for all of your home needs. When we return, we're going to hear a blockbuster announcement from Mike Adams, one of his findings that has not been made public yet. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Well, welcome back to this incredible session with Health Ranger Mike Adams and Dr. Brian Artis. When we broke, and I welcome these two gentlemen back, when we broke, Mike just dropped a bomb when he explained that this is how they get us sick when they want to, and they declare that it's an outbreak. Mike, or Brian, like, pick it up from there, because that's incredible.
Go ahead, Mike, recap what you just talked about.
You want to recap? Yeah, well, yeah, I'm just saying it's... Look, when we saw the, quote, outbreak in 2020 in northern Italy and also New York City, if it were a traditional viral outbreak, it should have followed a pattern of spread that was mathematically able to be modeled, and it did not. It did not follow that at all. And the far more likely explanation, and I know it sounds rather nefarious, but, you know, look who we're dealing with here, these depopulation globalists, is to simply synthetically produce a whole lot of venom peptides, lyophilize them, which means freeze-dry them, put it into a powder, and then use drones or other simple means, low-tech means, low altitude, just distribute it around a city. And as everybody gets sick, the media picks it up. Oh my gosh, there's an outbreak. People are showing up at the hospitals, and the hospitals start committing hospital homicide using remdesivir and ventilators. They kill a bunch of people. All of a sudden, you have fatalities. Oh, it's an outbreak. And then everybody's got to be locked down again and got to have vaccines again. So they can fake an outbreak. And well, I'm not saying they're faking the symptoms. The symptoms are real, but it's not a viral outbreak. It's air-dropped venom peptides that were synthetically created and distributed across the city to create panic, because these globalists are terrorists, and they use these panics to terrorize the people, to control us and lock us down, and then ultimately to kill a bunch of people and get people to consent to these injections, which turn their bodies into factories of venom peptides through the mRNA instructions. So that's the intro. Over to Dr. Argus. Mike,
Brian, how are we going to protect ourselves and our families? I mean, how do we survive this? I'm just going to throw that before Brian ties it in.
Okay, so this is one of the big reasons why it has been such an effort on my part to get this information to as many people as possible. If you don't know what the weapon is, how are we going to save people's lives?
Right.
If you never even know what you're treating, how are you going to save our lives? I mean, this is a massive, I've said it from May 2020, when I figured out remdesivir was this drug going to be used by Anthony Fauci in all hospitals. This is a massive like genocide attempt or eugenics program. So how do we stop it? You better know what the weapon is. When we discussed in the previous segment, and Mike did a great job. I love doing these shows. It's phenomenal. I like being with smart people. When he's talking about drones and dropping these aerosolized, possibly venom peptides, we showed on your show, and we've talked about in the previous segment here, that you can synthetically make these peptides in microorganisms and our own cells. E. coli, yeast, mammal cells. We showed that to the world. We know that they know how they can do that. So then all they got to do is get it into us. Okay. I want to make people aware of something. This even got more nefarious to me over the last 2 weeks. I have actually been looking up as I've uncovered this fact that you can synthetically engineer venom in E. coli. And then we showed in your presentation last Friday on your show, Dr. Jane Ruby, the correlation to outcomes in hospitalized patients and those who are dying with COVID who have E. coli infections. It is a 31% mortality rate in hospitals of people who have an intra-abdominal infection of E. coli. Now, I don't know if you guys have paid attention, but if you type online E. coli outbreaks in America, have you seen the water treatment plants reporting all throughout Ohio E. coli outbreaks in the water systems? Now, listen. They said there's E. coli overgrowth in all these parts of Ohio being reported in the media right now. Do you know how you manage E. coli in our source water and tap water? You put chlorine in it. Guess what happens when you reduce chlorine? You get E. coli outbreak or overgrowth. And then people are going to be bathing in it and drinking it at their homes. I want to show you something. On the CDC's wastewater surveillance site today, just an hour ago, I screenshotted this. I wanted to know, where are they finding the most COVID in water plants around the country? Guess which state only has red hot SARS-CoV-2 highlighted red COVID positive testing?
It looks like Ohio.
It is Ohio. In fact, I screenshotted Ohio.
It's so isolated.
Those are all the hot spots where they're finding SARS-CoV-2 in the water. Same cities they're reporting E. coli outbreaks. Okay. You guys need to be careful. Be careful with the water you're drinking. They can actually control the microorganisms that synthetically replicate venom in your body. And then all they got to do is expose you to it. I mean, what if they are, Mike, just dropping conotoxin venom peptides in the water where E. coli is present? Is it going to replicate venom in the water? Then you're going to drink it? Or then what if they weaponize it in the air and drop it in the air and you breathe it in and people are being exposed to E. coli in their body
and surface contact. So even once they drop it in the air, it falls on the surfaces, the handrails, the door handles, and so on all across the city. And people just pick it up, you know?
This is a great point. Can I interject here?
Yeah.
People don't know this. I know you think I might be crazy about the venom. I have seen and read published articles. They are taking synthetic, manufactured in a factory, scorpion venom, and they are spraying it out of crop duster airplanes onto farms in England as an insecticide. So it just lands on the plants, and as Mike just said, the bugs come up and walk on it or eat it, and then they die. What do you think happens if a human being goes walking through that farmland and breathes in scorpion venom? What do you think is going to happen?
Exactly. And another critical piece to this, if you don't mind me interjecting, is that the United States and the British government conspired to attack and destroy the Nord Stream pipeline, which means that's proof that they will attack civilian infrastructure, which is going to lead to mass starvation and famine across Western Europe for not just one winter, but multiple winters. So anybody out there asking, oh, what are you saying, that the government are terrorists? Yes, the governments are the terrorists, and they're proving it every single day. They are terrorizing the world in every way possible. They blew up Nord Stream. They're going to cause people to freeze to death in Europe. And yes, they are exposing us to toxins that are designed to kill. No question about it.
Isn't that amazing that Ohio has an E. coli outbreak and that's where they're finding the most COVID in the water right now? I find that incredible. Yep. Of all states in the country. Yeah.
Obviously, it doesn't necessarily need to be in a mammal. Like you said, it could be just a large medium of yeast or a medium of E. coli. So it doesn't have to be in the body to start attaching, replicating.
Remember the term genetic engineering? Remember, yes, we showed that Time Life magazine? They said, this is the medicine of the future, genetic engineering, and how it will change us in the next century. Well, the Utah State University declared that genetic engineering is the ability to get E. coli to generate on its own snake venom synthetically in the body. It is as if they are getting our bodies to look, as on the Time magazine's cover, our DNA is turned into a snake, half of it. Well, what do snakes create that humans don't? Venom. Now they're going to make us create venom. It's exactly why I believe the University of Arizona said the COVID-19 patients who all died, in their blood, it looked like venom coursing through their body. And I believe they can get the bodies to generate on their own venoms that then shreds membranes, and PLA2 is responsible for causing multiple organ failure and death.
This explains long COVID. I'm sorry to interrupt. This explains long COVID, because your body is making it. So you're going to keep making it until you displace those E. coli populations in your gut. Sorry to interrupt.
That's a new way to look at it. I want to pivot. I don't want too much time to go by without getting to the white fibrous clots. Mike, you've analyzed them in several different ways. We haven't spent a lot of time on that in this interview. But I want to bring this up because I want to call attention to something that Brian said in a recent interview, and I want you to explain what you meant, Brian. You said you think that possibly the white clots that embalmers are pulling out could be part of a hoax. Now, I've spoken with hundreds of embalmers, either by text, email. I've spoken to many of them on the phone. I've been given their videos. Why do you feel that way, and do you still feel that way, and what is that all based on? Because people were they caught that and they asked a lot about it.
You have to understand, I have these clots in my house.
You got the other half, or you got part of what Mike got.
Well, no, I mean, I've got three of them in my house right now that Richard Hirschman brought me, so I've got them in my home. They are impressive to look at. My concern is that it really could be, in my opinion, I have no idea, but I did voice that I'm worried that it could be fake, and I'll tell you why. I was curious to know. I've heard of other embalmers around the country who Richard Hirschman knows who have said they've reported the same thing. I decided to contact one of the head funeral directors in Dallas-Fort Worth who owns the most funeral homes in Dallas. And I asked him, are you seeing more business over the last 2 years with funeral burials and deaths, crematoriums, you name it, cremating people? Have you seen an increase in your business? You know, it's weird. He said he's not sure. He'd have to find out from his accountants. Really? You don't think that the funeral director would know if more people are dying or not? Then I said, I need to talk to someone who oversees the morgues and the preparation of the bodies. Do you have anybody who's a director over the embalmers? And he introduced me to her. I had a 1 hour conversation with her about these clots. And I said, has anyone reported to you with all these multiple funeral homes that they are pulling out blood clots and having a hard time getting embalming fluid into the bodies of the people who have passed away? And she said, I've never heard of a single incident. Now, these people are not a part of anything else. And I was like, that's very weird. I would think at least one person in Dallas, which is very liberal, lots of people vaccinated in Dallas County and Dallas City. I find it very odd that no one's reporting this outside of Richard and the people Richard knows. Now,
maybe that gal is lying to you.
Yeah, I agree with that, but that's not a representative of the potential across the country. And I, yeah. I can, you know, I mean, he literally pulled it on a video out of someone. And I've, like I said, I want to buttress this by saying, I don't just have one or two people. I have many people who've sent me those similar types of videos, embalmers that you could talk to, all across the country. I agree with you. It's very suspicious. Let's be open and objective about this. Yeah. But if you're right, do you realize what that means? That means that Richard Hirschman is a liar, that all 50, 60, 70 embalmers that I've talked to, literally directly, are lying and colluding?
No, that's very true. Hey, hey, Dr. Jane Ruby.
Yeah, I'm not, I don't have a dog in the race. I just want to find the truth, but.
No, I'm going to say this right now. I am absolutely 100% okay ever being wrong. I can just throw out my opinions and my concerns, but I would ask you, Dr. Jane Ruby, is there anybody in the movement here speaking out against the COVID mandates, anything related to COVID that we have figured out are lying?
Of course, like Mike said, anybody like could on be purpose? Lying to us. Yeah, but like, it gets very thick when sure. maybe 50, 70, 80 people, experts in that field, are lying to me. That gets a little thinner, right?
Yeah. So when I just said I'm concerned that they could be, it's just a concern. I have no idea.
Fair enough.
It's a concern. Yeah. And I could be completely wrong, and these absolutely could be pulled out of bodies all around the country. Am I convinced this really could be happening? Absolutely. When I look at the impact of venom peptides from crates, cobras, conotoxins, they all affect fibrinogen analysis and creation and destruction, which would absolutely cause this clotting effect. So I'm open to the fact it's a real thing. I just worry sometimes that there could be what I've heard termed lately, a red herring to like distract us from looking at the real bioweapon. And I don't know. So I just, I'm curious. I would love to see.
Nobody appreciates high antenna more than me. Are you kidding me? I've blown open frontline doctors and experts that turned out to be not who they claim, and their stories change. So nobody appreciates a high antenna. And I, you know, point well taken. And I appreciate you being suspicious. And I'll take that suspicion with me now as I go forward with these embalmers.
See, I think the clots explain the died suddenly phenomenon. So the clots explain that. And I think the clots are an unintended artifact of the mRNA instructions for protein synthesis. Like Brian just said, fibrinogen as well. And that something is going wrong where the protein synthesis is taking place inside the vascular system and creating these clots in some people. But then for other people, it's the venom peptide toxicity that ends up killing them or hospitalizing them. So I think part of the difficulty is that there are so many mechanisms at play here, and it's even designed to be convoluted, I believe, so that it's hard to reverse engineer what's going on. You know, for example, if they're putting two or three dozen different venom peptide instruction sets or protein synthesis instructions in one shot, you know, which doctor is going to be able to trace down the source of toxicity and try to diagnose a patient with what's gone wrong? Because
Hey, Mike, I've actually called forensic toxicologists around the country who don't even know who I am. I just looked them up, who are expert witnesses to causes of death and poisoning in people in courtrooms around the world. And I asked them, if I can get you blood samples or get you vaccines, can you tell me if I have a list of like 50? This is what I said to each of them. If I have 50 different venom peptides, can you guys figure out if any of those are in the shots? Do you know what they told me? All of them? That's not what we do. I said, what do you mean that's not what you do? They said, we take the actual clinical symptoms preceding their death, the individual, and we postulate what we believe based on our clinical experience and research, what the poison is, and then we go prove that. We don't go looking for a myriad of a whole bunch of stuff. So that's not something a forensic toxicologist would help you with. And I really don't know where to turn to look for how do we identify the instructions may be in these shots to actually synthesize venoms. I don't know where to go. I don't know who does that. I know venom research and scientists would know. I just don't know them.
Like, well, and it's all considered, you know, a proprietary intellectual property, and it's all censored out of any kind of documents, you know, national security secrets and things like that. So yeah, nobody has given a public reckoning of the protein sequences that are encoded into these mRNA shots. That has never been done. I mean, yeah, maybe they've given out one mm-hmm. sequence, but they haven't given out the full sequences of things that are being detected in people who take the shots.
And I'm somebody who questions everything. So one of the things we did not go yet on your show, Dr. Jane Ruby, and we should do this, in that list of the 36 venoms from the Italy study that they found in patients with COVID, there's actually multiple what are called prothrombin coagulating vectors from the snake venoms that cause blood clotting. And I need to get this out of the way. A lot of people said that I was wrong about snake venom peptides because snake venom only thins the blood. No, it doesn't.
Oh,
there's what's called factor VA that actually causes blood clotting cascades. And that there's multiple of them that only cause blood clotting extracted from various venomous creatures that was found in the blood and feces of COVID-19 patients. And what did you see as a complication of COVID? Blood clotting. What are we seeing with these embalmers? Blood clotting. What if there is instructions as I get further into this coagulation factor isolated from venoms found in the Italy study? It may confirm for me. I just haven't got into all the research on all of those yet. If it confirms for me that you see blood clots in animals from this coagulation factor found in COVID-19 patients, it could answer all of these crazy huge blood clots inside of these embalmers' clinics or offices where they're pulling out these clots.
Well, see, I don't think they're blood clots, though.
But they're not blood.
Yeah, not blood.
Mike has disproved that they're
blood.
Yes,
that's true.
Mike,
exactly
please.
Right.
They don't contain iron. They lack 96% of the iron concentration of human blood. So I think it's more your previous mention is, you know, protein synthesis, aggregated fibers that are being grown where they shouldn't grow. And then eventually they clog the artery, and that's when somebody keels over and dies on the football field or on at the news desk or wherever, you know, out jogging.
Right.
At least that's the theory. That's the best understanding. And I just want to say as a disclaimer, folks, you know, all three of us here, we're only taking our best educated, data-driven guesses of what this is. We're all subject to new data, you know, new explanations.
Yeah.
We're just trying to take the best shot based on what we know right now in good faith. That's all.
I think that's fair, Mike, because as I've said many times, we don't know everything that's in these materials or what they're doing. They're not truth tellers, and we only know what we've discovered and what we can kind of put together as experts. So anyway, I really didn't mean to make it sound like I didn't, you know, I just wanted Brian to bring that out and you know, give us that information, what was leading him, because he's pretty sharp. He's pretty on top of things. But you've given me a new, you know, sort of level of suspicion to beware. Like Mike said, beware. You know, Pfizer has, you know, not that they need the, you know, the ability or the legal right to do it, but they've already established that they don't disclose more than 50% of what's in these vials. And one other thought, Dr. Tal Braun has said about these, you know, that these labs are 50% of them in the United States are owned by, you know, you could go high up to Rothschilds. I mean, they already got this covered as much as they could, right? So listen, before we go get, you know, we've got about 5 minutes left, believe it or not.
Oh my.
I want Mike to, I know it's incredible. I want Mike to be able to tell us, Mike, what you are breaking that you haven't come out yet. And I'm so grateful that you're doing it on my show so that you and Brian can talk about it a little bit.
Okay. This gets into, well, we started testing the metals that are in the vaccines. And in order to do that, we drew the vaccines out of the vaccine vials using hypodermic needles. And those needles are made of stainless steel. And stainless steel contains all kinds of different elemental compounds, including chromium and nickel and so on. And we immediately began to see a lot of these metals in the resulting test. And so we thought, well, gosh, are some of these metals coming out of the needle? And so we ran a series of tests of different needle brands, including the Walmart brand called Relyon, and with different substances, including just regular saline solution, you know, sodium chloride versus vaccines. And we're going to go public with this in a big, kind of a mini documentary type of thing. It's like 20 minutes or something with all the charts and all the data. But the bottom line is, well, two big points. Every injection of anything, including insulin into your body or a flu shot, subjects your body to toxic elements that are stripped out of the needle. And that includes chromium, nickel, uranium, there are elements of that, some vanadium and things like that. So all the components of stainless steel. But the second bombshell that we found, and by the way, these metals can then be taken up by E. coli, you know, and bacteria that can be incorporated into your organs in ways that cause toxicity. So, and especially if you take a lot of shots, you know, if you're doing more boosters and more flu shots and lots of injections, you're getting metals building up in your body. And these are toxic metals, by the way. They have very well-known toxic profiles. But the other bombshell was that the vaccines, and we tested the three main manufacturers, the vaccines pulled up or caused what we will call the ionization of far more metals out of the needle than did saline solution. And this can be caused by a lower pH or a more acidic solution will strip out more metals from a stainless steel container or needle. And one vaccine in particular, which I'm not going to reveal here today, but that's coming, was far higher than the other brands of the vaccine. So again, to summarize, every needle injection subjects you to toxic metals at some level, but these vaccines subject you to much higher levels of these toxic metals than do other types of injections. So that's what we're going to come out with.
Do you think it was by design? That's huge. That's huge.
I don't think it's by design necessarily. I think it's just that these stainless steel needles are not being manufactured with enough resistance to oxidation in possibly acidic solutions. No one thinks about the needles. And so even if a vaccine company, if they test their vaccine, oh, maybe it's clean of metals. But what about the needle? Because that's how it gets into you. It's just another reason why you don't want to bypass your skin and your protective mechanisms and just start injecting experimental things into your body, because there's a lot that can go wrong.
Well put, well put. You know, we just got a couple of minutes left. I want both of you to weigh in. What are our next steps in society, as humanity? What are these, our next steps? How do we protect ourselves? What are your thoughts on that? Either one of you, please, you know.
Go ahead, Brian.
I think in correlation to the metals aspect that you were just relating, and this is incredible info. Great job, Mike. Mm-hmm. In fact, you were talking, I was like, imagine every insulin needle that people are pushing in their body if you're diabetic. Diabetics are the number one target. They're the ones dying the most as a percentage of all races in the world. Is not races, but demographics.
Groups,
it's diabetic, which represents actually highest percentages in America who are dying. Native Americans, also highest percentage of diabetics. Blacks, second highest. Diabetics, third. Hispanics, the third highest percentage of diabetics. Imagine the insulin needle complicating this impact, obviously. What do metals have to do with COVID? A huge aspect of COVID. In fact, in the Italy study, one of the components of venoms we didn't even talk about, but we highlighted real quick, was that they found what's called zinc metalloproteinases. That is a component of venoms. Snake venoms, conotoxin venoms, they actually destroy zinc reservoirs in the body. And what was the number one mineral you were taught and we all were proclaiming around the world, including the great Dr. Ben Marble at myfreedoctor.com, make sure you're supplementing zinc. You have
Dr.
to
Zelenko.
Replace zinc as these venoms deplete and destroy zinc and copper reservoirs.
And the quercetin is the zinc ionosphere that helps it, you know, absorb. But anyway, I want people to know that.
Zinc and copper are destroyed by venoms. What happens when you deplete the body of adequate amounts of copper? You get aneurysms. Your blood vessels start to expand and thin, and then you will have hemorrhaging in the body or you'll stroke out. That's the impact of the loss of copper and venom. So what is a solution? You better be supplementing zinc and don't stop. I mean, these are simple things that everybody knows, but there are certain published nutrients that inhibit and denature venom. EDTA.
Yes, please.
Vitamin C, NAC, glutathione, selenium, copper, and zinc. People need to get into their body. These things are being destroyed and depleted from your body.
Okay, Brian, thank you so much. People can find you, the Dr. Brian Artichoke, because I've got a wrap.
It's thedrartichoke.com.
Okay, that's where they can find you. And Mike, a few thoughts and where people
They can find me at naturalnews.com, of course, and also brighteon.com, which is the platform that we built. But the final thought is that these toxic elements displace nutritive metals in your body. So anytime you get toxins in there, they're blocking the usefulness of things that you need, like selenium and zinc and so on. So there you go. It's been an awesome show.
I am so I'm so just proud to be associated with both of you, to work with both of you. It's been my honor and my pleasure, and I know you'll both come back. Maybe we'll do it again together. This has been incredibly synergistic. So thank you again, both of you, for being with me. This is going to be another blockbuster. Well, that's it for this edition of the Dr. Jane Ruby Show. The last segment was supported by a great sponsor, Triad Air. Symptoms of shedding, air purification, never change a filter. It's filters with an S, filterssuck.com. Don't forget to use the promo code Ruby for 10% off and free shipping. This has been an incredible show. I'm going to rewatch it about 5 times myself just to get all this information. So we'll see you next time. And thanks for being with me today.